What is up, everybody? My name is Raymond Summerlin. This is the Sharp Angles podcast, the day after the Super Bowl. Recording this on Monday, I'm here with our draft guru, our draft expert, Ryan McChrystal, who put out a mock draft right as the game ended. The game ends, the mock draft's up, we're into draft season, and we're ready to go. We're going to talk through that mock draft. You can see the whole thing over at sharpfootballanalysis.com. Talk about some of the interesting stuff, the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, and just kind of what this class is here with Ryan. But I think we need to start with the Super Bowl. I mean, just another fantastic Super Bowl. We've been blessed with very good Super Bowls. That was not always the case, but another great Super Bowl night, another fun game. I suppose it wasn't great if you're a 49ers fan, but Ryan, I mean, you had to be happy. Were you at a party? Like, what? How are you taking in the Super Bowl last night?
I was taking in the Super Bowl mostly by myself after putting the kids to bed and mildly annoyed at the overtime, although the exciting finish was certainly worth it.
There were people at the Super Bowl party that I was at that were very unhappy with the overtime situation and wanting to leave. And then other people were like, no, we're not going home until we see the end of this game. And that's how it goes. What I really enjoyed about the Super Bowl, aside from just, I mean, it was a great game between two very good teams. What I really enjoyed about the Super Bowl was the halftime, because I'm 38. All of my friends are in that kind of 35 to 40 range. And Usher comes out and like, there are nine children just running around confused why every single adult in this room is transfixed on the television. And one of them like went up to my friend and asked, why are y'all all watching this? And I had to go, your parents had this exact song on repeat for the entire summer of 2004. So just be quiet for a second. Let us live our dreams. But the other realization I had, and this was not a good one, is, you know how when I used to watch halftime shows, you'd be like, oh, well, why are they just, you know, sending this for all the old people? Why are they scheduling all these old artists? And I was thinking yesterday, I was like, oh yeah, we finally got a good one for the young folks. And then it occurred to me that they're still scheduling it for the old folks. We're just the old folks now, Ryan.
Crossed my mind. I tweeted about it yesterday. I said, I hate that I'm old enough to enjoy the Super Bowl halftime show now.
That's where we are. Usher is our Bruce Springsteen arrived here. And I have the same thought a lot of times when I'm walking through the grocery store and I'm like, hey, this is a good song. Oh, this is a good song. And then I go, oh no, I'm squarely in the music demographic for the grocery store. And you know, that's sad. And I'll cry about that later. But before I do that, we're going to get into your mock draft. Like I said, mock drafts over on sharpfootballanalysis.com. Football season's over, but we're going to have a ton of content on there heading up to the draft from Ryan, from Brendan Donahue, who's going to do his mock drafts. Both of them have exceptional track records with mock drafts. We'll hear all of the prospect stuff from Ryan. We'll hear prospect stuff from Rich Rebar with more of like a fantasy kind of, you know, stint to it. And so there's going to be a ton over at Sharp Football Analysis. You can make sure you're keeping up with all of it if you just subscribe to our newsletter. Head over to the website. You can see where to subscribe to the newsletter. And we'll send you all of it and let you know kind of what we're doing. So we're going to keep going. Season's over, but, you know, we're just right into this fun draft season. And I think a place to start with the draft is for those of us like me, who I watch college football and I really enjoy college football, but during the football season, I'm not paying a ton of attention to the draft. I know who Caleb Williams is, and I know who Drake May is, and I know who Marvin Harrison is, right? But I'm not paying a ton of attention to the draft class as a whole. So as we move here squarely into draft season, I think the first place to start is just like with an overview. Where is this class strong? Where is it weak? Is it a good class? Is it generally considered a good class? Kind of where are we with this 2024 draft class?
I think it's a pretty standard draft class. There really isn't any one area that stands out as being spectacularly deep or spectacularly weak. I guess maybe the exception is quarterback, because there are six quarterbacks who are, at least in this early process, in the first round conversation-ish. I don't think we're going to get close to six actually going in the first round, but there's six guys that are at least worth discussing at this early stage of the process as maybe being in that conversation, which is obviously a lot. That's mostly made possible by the COVID year, giving these guys an extra year.
Yeah.
All of these guys, or half of these guys, needed the extra year to be eligible for this past season. So that's, and all of them took huge steps and would not have been first round picks a year ago. So that is a big
but when factor. I looked at it when I started looking into it for this podcast, I was looking at ages and I was like, there are a lot of 24-year-olds in this class, which there are quarterbacks like Michael Penix is like a few months younger than younger than Trevor Lawrence, right? Like that's the age we're talking about. So it's a very old quarterback class.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, three of them in that conversation, Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, and Michael Penix needed the COVID year. That was the only reason they were into college football last year. And Penix also had an injury redshirt year. So he's actually from the same recruiting class as Justin Fields. So like, imagine if Justin Fields had spent the past 3 years playing college football. Yeah. It definitely is a big factor in this class, and the Fields connection is part of it because he's obviously part of that conversation with the number one pick.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned that maybe not, you know, a standard class, maybe not standout. I've heard a ton. And again, I am more in the fantasy realm, so it's possible that this is the reason, but I've heard a ton about this wide receiver class being very good and having not just depth, as we've seen with like last year's wide receiver class had really good depth, but it didn't have that kind of high end prospect. This one has that depth and has at least three super high end prospects. So when you said kind of there's no real strengths, are you maybe not as high on this wide receiver class, or you think that this is just kind of the norm? This is just what we're going to continue to see from college wide receivers.
I guess I would say the very peak of the wide receiver class is a little better than usual. We don't usually have three guys who are legitimately in the top 10 conversation, although that has happened somewhat recently. The guys that are at least in that, you know, 10 to 12, top 10, top 12 range. And I wouldn't be surprised if some of those guys, although I'm personally am high on all of them, I wouldn't be surprised if as we get a little bit deeper in this class, we start to realize that, you know, all three of them aren't actually going to go in the top 10 because the depth that we're seeing year after year with the college game just churning out wide receivers is a factor here. So do you need to take Malik Nabers 8th overall or 9th overall or whatever it is, or can you pass on him and get another very good prospect on day two? That's we're kind of at that stage now where day two wide receivers are the talent level of guys who were going in the top 15, you know, 10 years ago, where teams were reaching for the need, and they're coming out of college at such a high rate of fully developed players. I mean, I can remember, you know, I've been covering the draft for just over 20 years now. When I first started, the saying with wide receivers was they need 3 years to develop. Well, that is certainly not the case anymore. If you're drafting someone in the first round, you are expecting a day one starter and a pretty high level contributor. I mean, if you're drafting them in the top 10, you're expecting them to be your number one receiver right out of the gate. And that just wasn't the case 20 years ago or even 10 years ago. So it's just the way the position is evaluated has changed, which is also affecting how it's valued in terms of where you're going to try to take those guys.
Yeah, when you know, Rich and I had a little bit of a lover's quarrel over last year's wide receiver class on the podcast a few weeks ago. And it was kind of about that idea, I think, is that what are we expecting from these players? Because Rich came from the perspective that last year's draft class was very good. And I think it was, you know, it was certainly good. I mean, Puka Nacua, what the Rams got out of him, where he went drafted, was amazing. Zay Flowers had a very good rookie season. Jaden Reed, especially with his draft capital, had a very good season. There are lots of names in there of rookies that did very well. But when I look at that class from last year, we're not just talking about Quentin Johnston, who, I mean, you and I had conversations last spring about Quentin Johnston busting is not a surprise to me. And so I am not like, that's not even in my calculus of this. That's just what's going to happen with him. And we'll see kind of where he goes from here. If they maybe have learned who he is as a player and try to use him that way. I don't have, you know, we'll see where we go from there, but I'm not even talking about him. You know, I'm worth looking at like the class as a whole. I look at that class and I don't see Garrett Wilson and I don't see Ja'Marr Chase and I don't see Justin Jefferson. And so when I'm looking at classes, I really like those are the difference makers. That's what I'm looking at. And Zay Flowers is very good. And I hope that Zay Flowers has an excellent career, but at his peak, is he Brandon Cooks? And is that kind of like what we're talking about? And so when I look at this class and I'm starting to read about this class, it seems like these three guys at the top and maybe beyond that, like maybe, you know, I'll get your thoughts a little bit later when we get into wide receivers, but beyond those three, those are the kind of like difference making receivers that are in more of that Ja'Marr Chase and maybe not quite to that level, but, you know, Garrett Wilson in that range. Am I right kind of on that read?
Yeah, I think those top three names, Harrison, Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, they're legitimate potential number one overall, you know, like number one receivers, you know, top 10 fantasy type of guys. They could put up those types of seasons within the next 2 years, even like almost right out of the gate. They're capable of that, depending on the supporting cast and who their quarterback is.
Yeah, obviously.
Obviously, that's all a factor, but they, it's reasonable to have those types. I don't know that I would say expectations, but
sure,
they're realistic hopes for those players to have superstar status within 2 years. And then there's good depth behind those guys. Guys like, you know, Brian Thomas Jr., Adonai Mitchell, like those are guys who have number one overall wide receiver ceilings, I would say, even if they're not quite there. And those are guys that you're going to get maybe the very back of round one or even into the early part of round two. So, that, I mean, that's sort of what I was saying as far as like how we've evaluated, how the position is valued has shifted a little bit. Like 10 years ago, Adonai Mitchell's a first round pick, absolute stone cold lock. And I don't have him in my first round mock draft right now, just because the depth of the position year after year, the need, because of the depth, the teams don't have like the glaring needs as much. Like it just, everything has changed about how this position is approached in the draft.
And that what kicked off that conversation with Rich was that idea is that teams are playing multiple receivers now. You know, if you have your stone cold lock number one wide receiver, that player is on the field all the time, and that player is getting, you know, 25 to 30% of the targets, and that's the way it should be. That's who those players are. They are difference makers. But behind them, I mean, we saw it with the Packers, right? Packers have a lot of good young receivers. And even if you're talking about Jaden Reed as a hit, he was still a part-time player, and they were playing Dontavian Wicks, and they were playing, for a part of the year, they were playing Torre, and they were playing, you know, Romeo Dubs, and like, there are all these names in here. Bo Melton, that's the name I couldn't get to. Bo Melton, our late season king, Bo Melton. And so, yeah, so it's interesting the way that that has change. Just kind of an overview here of your mock. And like I said at the top, you can go over to sharpfootballanalysis.com right at the top of the page. You can find his mock and kind of go through it. We're not going to go through pick by pick, but you can go and look at it. But I did want to go over here in the first round, four quarterbacks, five wide receivers, plus Brock Bowers. I don't really know what we're going to do with Brock Bowers. Is he a tight end? Like, what are we? That's going to be an interest. That could be a fun conversation this year. We had eight offensive tackles plus Jaxon Powers-Johnson, which I don't know anything about him. It's not my thing, but he's more like a center. Is that kind of what he is?
Played center, has experience at guard. Yeah, an interior lineman, we'll call him.
Interior lineman. So that's nine offensive linemen, four edge rushers, and then seven cornerbacks. And like you look at that list and you go, hey, those are the positions that get paid. And so that makes sense. So is that kind of grouping, is that a reflection of especially the nine offensive linemen, the seven cornerbacks, is that a reflection of the talent in this class? Or is that more just, these are the positions that actually matter, and that's people are going to spend on these positions, even if maybe it's, maybe some of these guys aren't, maybe shouldn't be as high as they're being taken?
A little bit of both. I would say the first 20, just speaking in general terms, when filling out a mock draft, the first 24 or so picks are going to be guys that they're just, I just think they're first rounders. Like they're just, the talent levels there. And then when you get to the end, I do factor that in. I mean, I have a lot of cornerback, probably have more cornerbacks than most. Other mock drafts might have more wide receivers than I do, but those are, like you said, those are the positions that get paid. So if I'm getting down to the end and I'm looking at team needs and like who's on the board, like if someone needs a cornerback and they need a guard, well, they're probably going to draft the cornerback more often than not, because that's the value position. So as long as I think that there's a reasonable player there, I'm going to be more likely to put that into my mock draft. So it's a little bit of both. There is depth at talent in those positions, but once you get down to the end of the mock draft, you know, I slide Kamari Lassimer into my mock draft. He's sort of a fringe first round process, but he's a cornerback. And I think that those guys tend to get bumped up. So, you know, I could see there being a run on cornerbacks, or maybe even a one. I didn't have a run on receivers, but that could also happen as well, just because those are the valued positions in this era.
He's a Georgia cornerback. So, you know, 22 yep. Eagles, you know, lock him in.
I did consider that.
He'll be there with Regal. We'll have our wonderful Eagles Georgia pipeline continued. All right, let's get into a few of the picks here. You know, obviously we're gonna focus here with this first mock as we're easing into draft season. We're gonna focus a lot on the beginning of the draft. If you're focusing on the beginning of the draft, you're focusing on quarterbacks, and you're focusing on Justin Fields and the Bears decision there. You had the Bears taking a Caleb Williams from USC. I think the conversation, this is just an aside, the conversation about Caleb Williams has been so interesting because we went from right after the draft last year, Caleb Williams was definitely going to be the number one pick. And then we spent a lot of the football season as USC struggled and Caleb Williams maybe didn't hit the highs that some had expected. We're like, oh, is there going to be another one? Are we going to have Drake May jump there? Are we going to have Jaden Daniels jump? And now we're back into squarely in a draft season. And it feels to me like Caleb Williams is, again, just the consensus. Whoever's drafting at number one is going to be taking Caleb Williams. Am I reading that right? Is that kind of where we are before we, you know, get to the combine here?
I think so. I think maybe if a different team had the number one pick, there might be more of a debate. But the way that I look at this, I mean, we just mentioned it off the top. Justin Fields is so young still. Same recruiting class as Michael Penix, who's going to be in the first round conversation this year. And he's shown steady growth. Like, he didn't come in and light it up right away. But I didn't, you know, I liked him, but I didn't expect him to come in and light it up right away. Like, there were some obvious flaws in his game in terms of handling pressure and making decisions in the pocket at Ohio State. So the fact that he's needed some years to grow shouldn't surprise people. It shouldn't surprise the Bears. And so I think ultimately, whatever the Bears do, I'm okay with. If they decide to stick with Justin Fields, I don't think they will. But if they decide to, I'd be like, okay, they've got a lot of information on him now. He's really talented. He's making growth. That's reasonable, especially when you consider how much they can get for trading that pick. That would obviously be part of the conversation. So I think when you have that, you have a developing young quarterback that you could reasonably invest in for the next 5 years. That would be a reasonable decision. The only reason to move on for that is if you're going to swing for the fences with someone with an even higher ceiling, and that's only Caleb Williams. Like Jaden Daniels, you could argue there's a lot of similarities between the two of them. Drake May, I think, is, you know, a tier below that, just speaking in terms of ceiling. But Caleb Williams has the Patrick Mahomes ceiling. He's the only quarterback in this class that truly has that, at least in terms of like a realistic, you know, maybe if Jaden Daniels hits like his absolute 100% ceiling as Patrick Mahomes like. But Caleb Williams, he's the most realistic path to being that type of player. So if you're going to move on from Justin Fields, I feel like that's the only reason to do it, is if you're going to try to hit that grand slam. And that's only Caleb Williams. So I think that they probably go that direction just because he gives you that potential. The potential is out there for you to build a dynasty like the Chiefs now have.
But so what I'm hearing there maybe is if they do decide to trade down, and I'll just very quickly about that decision. I think I've mentioned it before. That decision for me for the Bears is pretty straightforward. We don't know how much Fields will develop. We don't know how good Caleb Williams could be and will develop. One of them is going to cost a lot of money sooner than the other one is. And if you draft Caleb Williams, you reset, at least probably, didn't work out for Frank Wright, but you reset the clock on your job status. That's a pretty easy decision for me for them. And so I would be surprised if that's not the direction they go and try to move Justin Field and get picks. But kind of regardless of that, let's say that they decide to keep Justin Field and they trade out of that pick. If the Falcons, let's say the Falcons, are trading up in order to get into this conversation, do you think there's a chance that anybody really, not just the Falcons, it's just a name that came to my head, any team, if they're trading up, are they definitely trying to swing for the fences as well? Or do you think that there's a chance that if we come out of testing and Jaden Daniels just really surprises people, or Drake May really surprises people, that there could be another person here at number one? Or do you think that that ceiling, that Caleb Williams ceiling, is ultimately going to win out, whether it's the Bears or somebody spending a lot to get up to that number one spot?
I would certainly say greater than 50% chance is Caleb Williams, just because everybody sees that ceiling. It's why we were talking about him as a lock a year ago. But he did have a down year. Jaden Daniels did win the Heisman and put up some pretty spectacular numbers. It could be them. I mean, him, Drake May, I mean, he's coming off a pretty terrible year as well, even worse than Caleb Williams. Yeah. So
I am very interested in the fact that Sam Howell had the exact same thing happen to him. I don't think Drake May is going to, you know, crash out like Sam Howell did. But there's an interesting history of North Carolina quarterbacks maybe being in school a year too long with this affecting him. But anyway, sorry. Continue on.
Yeah, the fact that he had a down year, I think it's much less likely that anyone would trade up for him. The team that I could see maybe moving up to number one and not taking Caleb Williams might be the Patriots. they're, even though Belichick's not there, the whole front office for the most part is still there. They definitely think outside the box. It seems like Elliot Wolf is now going to be the primary decision maker there, although it's a little bit it's a little bit murky. He was not Belichick's number two last year, and Matt Groh, Belichick's number two from last year, is still there. They also brought in Alonzo Highsmith, and the reason I wanted to mention that is Alonzo Highsmith and Elliot Wolf were in Cleveland when they drafted Baker Mayfield, which was not even close to the consensus number one overall. I mean, he was very much in, we were fully expecting him to be a top 10 pick that year, but virtually nobody thought he was the number one quarterback in that draft class. It was most people thought Sam Darnold. There were some people in the Josh Williams camp that you should swing for the fences with him. Nobody really was saying that Baker Mayfield, but two of the decision makers who played a big role in that decision are now in New England. So they've always been a little bit of a wild card organization when it comes to the draft, and even without Belichick, they still could be with this quarterback decision.
Yeah, they're interesting. They're definitely sitting there at three, assuming they don't trade up. They are a pivot point for sure in this draft and where they're going. And you're right. I've been doing the kind of coach and GM tracker over at the website, sharpfootballanalysis.com, great website. And their GM, I had them initially as a GM opening, right? And then I keep reading stuff. You read stuff that Robert Kraft would say. And you got to the point of, oh, they're just going to like run it back with the same exact group. And I'm interested in kind of what that says about how they viewed, because the main issue the Patriots had, this is a complete tangent, but the main issue the Patriots have had is this inability to really build, especially on the offensive side of the ball, a functional roster. And I know Bill Belichick's gone, and ultimately he was the final decision maker. But if you're keeping the same people, are you saying that Bill Belichick was the problem in their ability to evaluate wide receivers properly, and their ability to build an offense to not take guards 100 spots above where people expected them to be taken? Is that what you're saying? And that's kind of it's an interesting situation for sure in New England, one that I don't fully understand, especially since I think Robert Kraft said, I believe this is a correct quote, that they might look into it after the draft. And I'm like, this is a pretty important draft for them. And so it's a really interesting situation in New England. And like I said, there'll be a pivot point there at three. Before we get to them, though, I do want to talk about the Commanders here at number two. Commanders, new, brand new everything, organization, front office, coach, everything is different here with the Commanders. They obviously have Sam Howell, with those Drake May connections, bringing those up again. They have Sam Howell. The wheels fell off at the end of last season. I think that, that experiment has been run, and we know what the results of it are. I'm interested in looking at the spot. Is there any way that the Commanders bypass a quarterback here, and I would assume trade down and not take somebody here, but is there any way they bypass a quarterback here just based on how bad their roster is and kind of where they are in the rebuilding process?
I don't think so. It just wouldn't really make sense, especially when you just look at the fact that this is the whole organization, everybody's new in the organization. This is their chance to sort of restart everything for that organization from top to bottom and bring in a quarterback, just wipe the slate clean. And you've got good options there. Like if Caleb Williams is off the board, there isn't necessarily an absolute slam dunk pick, but there's legitimate, number two overall picks to choose from. Even though, I'm a little bit lower on Drake May than some, but he would be a legitimate option. A lot of people would view that as a legitimate option. Jaden Daniels, certainly. Even JJ McCarthy, that's not crazy to think that he could be in the conversation as high as number two for them. But the point is they've got a lot of choices, and ultimately through this process, they're going to end up talking themselves into someone because they just need a new face of the organization. Everybody wants everything to start over from scratch. If they could just bring in a quarterback, this is the new Commanders, just total rebranding. It makes too much sense. The fact that they have good options and they just really need that new face of the organization, it's going to happen.
I mean, I'm there too with you. I mean, if you're this high and there are quarterbacks there that warrant it, then that's just a decision you have to make. Like that's really where they are with this. And like you said, it seems to me, as certainly someone who has not studied it to the level you have, that there are quarterbacks in this class that warrant it. Interestingly, the quarterback you gave them in this mock, and we have to talk about this, is Jaden Daniels, who I think that would not be the I don't want to say consensus, but that would certainly not be the most likely thing we'd see in mocks. I believe most people are going to have Drake May in this spot at number two to the Commanders. You have Jaden Daniels now. We're very early. We haven't even got to the combine yet. This is probably going to change at some point. But when you're thinking about that, when you're thinking about Jaden Daniels here ahead of Drake May, why? What pushes you that way? What do you see in Jaden Daniels that maybe is leaning you towards, okay, if we're actually going to spend this pick on a quarterback, we need to spend it on this guy?
Yeah, this was a very last minute change for me. I emailed you guys over the weekend and said I was going to flip Jaden Daniels into the number two spot and drop Drake May. It was really just, I've been doing more research and going back and watching more of these guys, I just sort of realized during the season, I didn't appreciate just how bad Drake May was last year. And so that was ultimately what swung me to go with Jaden Daniels, because obviously his career has been trending up all along. I mean, a few years ago, he looked like, you know, 3 years ago, coming out of Arizona State, I would not have thought that he was even in the conversation to be a day two draft pick. And now here we are thinking he's almost virtually a lock to be in the top 10. And he improved a lot last year or 2 years ago in his first year at LSU, and obviously skyrocketed this past year. There are flaws with Jaden Daniels. He doesn't have a huge arm, and that's going to be, certain teams are going to knock him for that. But I think coming in and playing for Cliff Kingsbury, he's going to be a pretty natural fit for that offense. You don't need a spectacular arm to play in that scheme. And even though, you know, Kingsbury does like to challenge downfield when he has the weapons to do so, but there's plenty of other positives about that offense that Daniels is going to excel at, most notably his athleticism, which when he enters the league, it's not Lamar Jackson, but it's going to be the closest thing we have to Lamar Jackson once he's a starting quarterback in the league. He'll be the next best thing in terms of that dynamic athleticism. And so I think he's a little bit of a safer pick because of that, because Drake May, man, going back and looking at him this past year, the accuracy is a big concern for me. One of the stats that I reference a lot is route adjusted stats. I use it for both quarterbacks, for cornerbacks, and for wide receivers. It's my favorite way of sort of, you know, sifting through all of the stuff that's happening out there and trying to pinpoint talent as much as possible. Because if we look at different, you know, completion percentage, for example, wildly different for someone like Bo Nix, who throws the ball 5 yards down the field 80% of the time, basically, and someone like Jaden Daniels, who takes a lot of deep ball shots. So if you go to route adjusted metrics for quarterbacks, we're looking at route adjusted on target rate. Basically, if you're throwing a screen pass, you're going to be on target at a very high rate. If you're throwing to a go route, you know, closer to 50% is your on target rate, is what you're hoping for. So we take their whole season, look at all the routes that they've thrown the ball to, and sort of see what their accuracy rate is relative to the league average accuracy rates to all those different types of routes. Drake May, his first year as a starter 2 years ago, was a little bit above average, which was, you know, with it being his first year as a starter as a 20-year-old, very encouraging. The expectation for him being a top five pick was based on, wow, he did that as a 20-year-old, his first year as a starter. Where's the growth going from here? Well, there was absolutely no growth. He fell off a cliff. His accuracy above average, route adjusted accuracy rate, 8.9% below expected last year. That ranked 59th out of 70 qualified power QBs. That is horrible. Like that is with, you know, the quarterbacks in his range are guys who play for Rutgers and Minnesota, like the bottom of the barrel type of quarterbacks. Not
Big Ted out here taking strays, yeah. The Big Ten.
Well, yeah, death. Big Ten quarterback play, not ideal. That's the type of, it would be, in the few years that I've been tracking this stat, nobody to go on to have any kind of success in the league has been anywhere close to that. Even
if you remember off the top of your head where Will Levis was last year? Because Will Levis had a very similar situation.
He wasn't good, but relative to college, he was kind of average, which was enough to be like, yeah, it's a little bit of a red flag to only be average relative to all the college quarterbacks, obviously, but not enough to say, you know, huge red flag. This is a really big red flag. Now, like I said, last year he was above average. So like the talent is still there, but it does kind of make you wonder, like, okay, how much of this is scheme? How much of this is the talent around him? What was he propped up by? He had a better offensive line 2 years ago. Is he only accurate when he has better protection. And I mean, I haven't really dug into those numbers, but through the eye test, I think that was a big part of it, was he was under pressure a lot this year, and his accuracy really becomes kind of scattershot. And on one hand, that explains it away a little bit. It can maybe make you talk yourself into taking a chance on him, that, you know, he's not going to play behind that bad of an offensive line. But at the same time, a rookie quarterback jumping to the NFL, the game is faster. You are going to be under pressure a lot. What really constitutes pressure in the NFL kind of changes a little bit. There are zero snaps basically where you're in the pocket for 5 or 6 seconds untouched, whereas that does happen with some regularity in college if you're playing behind a decent offensive line. So that to me is really what swayed me, was I don't think, when you have other good options, which Jaden Daniels is a good option, JJ McCarthy is also going to be a good option, can you really take a quarterback like Drake May, who's coming off such a down year and in need of so much development? I don't think you can at number two. So unless something changes through the workout process, I'm going to stick with Jaden Daniels at number two and have Drake May a little bit lower over the next couple of versions of this mock draft, I think.
That's interesting. Yeah, like I said, because I don't think that's certainly not the most common mock here for May. And you actually had May all the way down at 11th with the Vikings. Now, you don't do trades in this mock, and so that I assume that had something to do with the no trade. But if the Patriots, and we'll talk about the Patriots in a second, kind of their decision, if the Patriots pass on a quarterback and there are no trades, I mean, is this just that there aren't any other options here for, as we go down this list, like how far, I guess 11, is that the floor? Is that as far as you could see him falling?
Well, I could see him falling further if JJ McCarthy establishes himself as a legit top 10 prospect as well. I'm not convinced that Drake May is the number two or even the number three. I put him as the third quarterback off the board, so I am leaning that direction over McCarthy, but I do have McCarthy in the first round still. I had him going a little bit later to the Bucks, and if that order were flip-flop, that would not shock me. A lot of this has to be sorted out though through the process. Like, we're obviously going to learn a lot more at the combine, that once teams get a chance to talk to these guys, their personalities matter a lot. How they do, up at the whiteboard, talking through plays, that matters a lot. All of the face-to-face time that they get, that plays a big role in these years where we have a lot of quarterbacks who are in the conversation, even though we can pretty much enter the year with, we can say pretty solidly that there's a top three, JJ McCarthy is probably four, and then Nixon Penix are 5 and 6. Like, that's pretty clear cut right now. But all this one-on-one time that they're going to get with teams over the next couple of weeks, it's definitely going to shake that up. It's hard to predict how it's going to happen, but it will shake it up. It's not going to stick with that order, I don't think. So we'll definitely learn more. But yeah, I mean, as far as the order in this particular mock draft, that's sort of how I see it breaking down. And then as far as matching them with teams, I don't predict trades. We'll almost certainly have three quarterbacks go in the top 10. Someone will trade if they do end up sliding. The Patriots, if they decide not to take one, maybe it's a trade there or any of the other teams. And it could just be another team. The Falcons are a team that I had passing on a quarterback, but they could also certainly take one. So there's a lot of ways for a third quarterback to ultimately get there. But as of right now, I just hate messing around with the trades. It throws so much off. It's hard enough to get an accurate mock draft this early in the process. You throw trades in there, it's just chaos.
Yeah, no, it becomes wild. As someone has to go through and kind of copy and paste some of those mock drafts when trades are made, I am very happy with the no trade approach this early in the process. You mentioned all three of the other, the other, I guess, big six quarterbacks we're looking at here with JJ McCarthy. I mean, you've already talked about McCarthy here. I am, as somebody, again, who's coming into this new, I am pretty shocked about the way you're talking about McCarthy, because I didn't know that was even a possibility. Is that, I mean, obviously he won a national championship and he's coming from Michigan, and we've kind of seen glimpses there, but also, I mean, as a Penn State fan, I watched them beat Penn State without even having to use JJ McCarthy in the second half. And so how are we arriving here at McCarthy being kind of this level of prospect?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you in terms of my skepticism of McCarthy. It's, you watch the highlights of JJ McCarthy and you can certainly see why the excitement is there. But as far as trusting him when there were games, like you mentioned, where it kind of looked like Michigan didn't even trust him all that much. It definitely raises, you know, it definitely raises a red flag for me. Like there was, I believe these are two pick sixes in the semifinal game against TCU 2 years ago. And if you remember this past semifinal game against Alabama, it was definitely the first drive. It may have even been the first pass he attempted in the game where he threw what looked like an interception that ended up getting overturned. And it was just a terrible decision. Threw it to the sideline, basically right to an Alabama cornerback who just happened to have stepped out of bounds just before. I mean, those types of mistakes on a big stage, that raises a big red flag for me. The reason why I think that he's in this conversation is partially, like I said, the highlights, you can see the peak is there when it clicks for him. He has good athleticism. He has the arm, physically everything, you know, he has all the boxes to check off there. There's been a lot of reports that teams that have talked, scouts that have talked to him and the Michigan coaching staff really rave about his football IQ. And like I said, how during the process, that's when teams get more one-on-one time, that can really shake up the draft order a little bit. So I toyed with the idea of leaving him out of the first round. I ended up putting him in there, and that was part of it, because that is something that we obviously can't see, but does ultimately play a big impact. So if he is somebody who's going to go out and wow teams in interviews just with his football intellect, and we can see that the talent is there for him to have a high ceiling, I think those two factors combined, plus the fact that he's young, you know, if he is the fourth quarterback off the board, the guys that that you're choosing from are Bo Nix and Michael Penix, who've been in college forever. I think all those factors combined, that's why I say he's kind of looks like the clear-cut number four right now, but a team could certainly fall in love with him if he is really as brilliant, you know, in these, you know, one-on-one meetings as some people are saying that he is. That could be the factor that pushes him up to the third quarterback off the board and he goes in the top 10.
You mentioned when you were writing about this decision, you had him going to the Bucks at number 26. And you're writing about this decision, you know, you were talking about the Bucks are almost certainly going to re-sign Baker Mayfield, and we'll see kind of what that commitment is. But you put J.J. McCarthy to them because he, unlike Bo Nix and unlike Michael Penix, he probably needs more development. And that, if that's the case, you know, that really makes the top 10 conversation very difficult if a team comes in thinking that. But I suppose if you're drafting somebody at the end of the first round to back up, you know, a quarterback that just had one very good year, even within that good year, there were peaks and valleys, and we know that does make some sense. So that makes sense to me, McCarthy at the end. But I'm going to have to definitely watch more about him and kind of figure out where we're going. But as soon as you said coach meetings, I went, oh, there you go. That happens every year. We get into that every single year. Speaking of, you know, we brought him up a couple times here with Bo Nix and Michael Penix. Both will be 24 before the season starts. Do you think that is, you didn't have either of them in the first round. They certainly, you know, could sneak into the first round for sure. But when you're talking about them as prospects, is that age the first and kind of primary red flag for them, and then we kind of just building on that, or what are our concerns with, I guess we could start with Nix.
I don't think age is going to be too much of a concern, other than because they've been in college so long and we've already seen so much development, do you start to wonder how close to their ceiling they already are? Whereas with someone like McCarthy, with him being so young and not having a ton of experience, it's much easier to imagine a huge ceiling. Players that usually don't hit that ceiling when they have a long way to go, obviously. So that's, you know, that's a risk you take, but it's easier for teams to talk themselves into the high ceiling when the player is further away from the ceiling. It doesn't, if you really boil it down the decision-making process, it's not a great way to go about making decisions. You should probably side with the players closer to their ceiling and already playing well. That would be my philosophy, but it's not how teams usually work. So I think that it does work against them in that regard. But it's not like they're Brandon Whedon also. Yeah. Like they're still, I believe Bo Nix is 23 and Penix is 24. They have a very long NFL career ahead of them still if they pan out. So I don't think it's going to be a huge issue. With Nix, man, he is a fascinating prospect because when he started as a true freshman at Auburn, I think he has 60. I can't remember. I guess I didn't write it down. I think it's 60 starts or something.
It's been 84 years. It's that mean. Like when you think of Bo Nix at Auburn, like I feel like I was watching it on standard definition television, like in high school. That's how long it feels like Bo Nix has been in our lives as a college quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, his first game, I believe, was against Oregon with Justin Herbert at quarterback. He's been around a long time. And when he came out, when he started, he played like this is not, I'm not making this comparison as a prospect, but the style of play was like young Brett Favre, like just running around with his hair on fire. He's got a good arm, taking shots downfield with reckless abandon, and just playing just out of his mind and making huge mistakes that was costing Auburn football games, mixing in some really nice highlights as well, but a lot of mistakes that frustrated Auburn fans, which is why he ended up at Oregon ultimately. Then at Oregon, it was kind of a gradual process over the past 2 years, but they turned him into a game manager. Like, he was dinking and dunking his way down the field. His average depth of target was among the lowest in the country. His rate of throwing 10 or more yards downfield is one of like the bottom five in the entire country. Now, when he throws downfield, like I said, he does have a good arm. He was playing like crazy Brett Favre early in his career. Like, he's a good athlete. He's got a big arm. They completely coached that out of him and he became a game manager. So I'm skeptical of him, because if the best version of him in college was being a game manager, that's a red flag to me, because we see crazy players taking huge risks and playing at a high level in college all the time, because the best guys can get away with it. The number one overall pick, Caleb Williams, you know, it bit him a few times more often this year, but last year USC was very good and he was playing that way, making huge mistakes all the time. But the best players can just get away with that in college, and Bo Nix could never get away with it. He only became a Heisman Trophy type of candidate once he completely cut that out of his game. So that's the red flag. But at the same time, like, especially if he were to fall to the second round, like, let's say the Falcons pass over or the Patriots pass over a quarterback in the first round, they want to take a much lower risk on someone in the second round, take Bo Nix and plug him in and start him right away. And you can, I trust him. Like, he will be a perfectly fine starting quarterback from day one, as long as you've got maybe the Patriots aren't a good example because you need a few weapons around him, I think. But, you know, put him in Atlanta with a good run game and some decent weapons, he will be perfectly fine as a starter. I have no doubt about that. It's just the issue with him is the ceiling. Is there any more ceiling left?
Well, I mean, Colt McCoy had a nice long career, and it sounds to me like the game manager version of Bo Nix you're describing is Colt McCoy. And, he was around
time. That you brought that up, because I mentioned that during the season that was a really good comp. He's Colt McCoy with a stronger arm, which, you know, Colt McCoy was a very good backup for a long time with no arm at all, basically. That type of quarterback with a stronger arm, that's probably a serviceable starter. So I think that can definitely be Bo Nix's career.
Look at that. Look at that. I'm nailing comps without even really watching them. What a time to be alive. On Michael Penix, I have watched a lot more of Michael Penix coming from Indiana. He still did not score against Penn State. I will say that until a day I die. But we know him. He had, like you said, a very long college career. Ended up at Washington, obviously had a great season with Washington this year and all of their wide receivers. He has, you know, his age, he's got the injury history, a pretty serious injury history, if I'm remembering correctly. But what we saw this year was spectacular. So he's just another one of these, right? That there are things you love and things you don't. And that's generally probably a late first, second round quarterback, right?
Yeah, I think with Penix, the reason why he's not being talked more seriously about as a first round pick is the injuries. Two season-ending knee injuries. I believe they were both ACL tears. That's a pretty big red flag, especially for a guy, like I said, he's the oldest of this quarterback group. He was 6 years in college. That's concerning to have those types of knee injuries. And so I think that's going to be a factor. That said, I love Penix. And his peak this year was spectacular. No other quarterback in this class.
That semifinal game was unbelievable.
That was the best game a quarterback played all season. One of the best over the past few years. It was spectacular. I think that, remember Texas made a run? Washington controlled that game, but Texas made a run at the end, and it looked like it was going to be an all-time collapse for Washington. I think if Texas finishes that off, and that's just the end of Penix's career, and his career ends the way CJ Stroud's ended last year with a spectacular
performance. I was going to make that comment. Very good defense.
And that's the lasting image that we have. I think everyone is going like, hold on a second. I know he was hurt, but he's not hurt right now. And he just lit up a very good Texas defense. I think the conversation is very different than when he went up against Michigan and played the worst game of his season. The worst game of maybe the past two seasons of him being at Washington. That left a different taste in people's mouths.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to write that off because him at his peak, the throws that he makes are just the way that he throws receivers open. It is spectacular. He makes some of the best throws of any quarterback in this class. Now, he actually is a pretty good athlete, but you're never going to ask him for that to be a part of his game, knowing that he has some season-ending knee injuries in his past. So that's a factor. You got to assume that he's a pure pocket passer, basically. And teams are less interested in that overall these days. So that might also be a little bit of a factor. Teams want someone who can run around a little bit. And even Bo Nix, although I don't know that he'll test as well as Penix, but just because he doesn't have the injury history as well, you're going to be more comfortable letting him do that than you will Penix, where you're going to try to keep him in the pocket. So that could be a factor. But man, if someone takes him early in round two and plugs him as a starter right away, I might make him my pick for rookie of the year, because he is just, all that experience has made him such a polished passer. And these quarterbacks who win with elite accuracy, it's very rare that they're busts. They usually will find a way to be successful and have at least an okay career. I'd put Baker Mayfield in that category. Accuracy was the biggest selling point for him as a prospect. And basically everything that could go wrong went wrong for him over the first 5 years of his career, playing with a revolving door of head coaches and offensive coordinators and getting shipped out of Cleveland early. And yet look what happened to him this past year. Like he still found a way to have success. So these quarterbacks who win with accuracy, they just don't fail at a very high rate. So I still think Penix is going, even if he's the sixth quarterback off the board, I'm going to have a relatively high expectation for his career.
So I wanted to get to here to, you know, we're running a little out of time here, but I want to get to the wide receivers as well, because like I said, I'm very interested in this class, and we're not going to obviously go through the whole class. There's a ton of them, but your top three wide receivers here, Marvin Harrison Jr., who is Marvin Harrison. If positional value was not part of the equation, is Marvin Harrison Jr. the number one overall pick? Is that kind of where we are?
Maybe. I don't think the gap between Harrison and these other two receivers is that big. I think if he had a name other than Marvin Harrison, there would be more of a conversation about who the number one receiver is. And that's not a knock against Marvin Harrison Jr. It's just a reflection of how high I am on Rome Odunze and Malik Nabers as well. I think they're all legitimate. You should expect to plug them in as your number one and number two wide receiver and get elite production out of them for rookies.
So that's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting, because you have Marvin Harrison Jr. here at number three to the Patriots, Malik Nabers at four to the Cardinals, and Rome Odunze to the Giants at number six. So all three of them in the top six. Very clearly, you're saying with that these are elite prospects. These are Ja'Marr Chase, Garrett Wilson, Justin Jefferson. Like that's who these guys are. And that level of talent's influx, especially some of the teams you have them going to, with the Cardinals, who desperately use that kind of wide receiver, the Giants, and the Patriots. We know about the Patriots and what they need. That could be a really kind of transformative. If these three guys come in and these three guys are that level, that's kind of transformative a little bit for the league based on how important these alpha wide receivers are.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to mention too, that these are, they're pretty different receivers too. And so that's going to shape how teams decide they come off the board. Now with the Patriots, I think it's a pretty easy decision to plug Marvin Harrison Jr. into the if they were to go wide receiver. They don't have a wide receiver basically right now. So like they're not picking and choosing the right type of guy. They just want the best one to come in and, you know, the best, safest pick. And that's probably Marvin Harrison Jr. He wins with his routes, really, is what he does. And those guys, they just don't butt. He doesn't even have spectacular hands. Although he makes some great catches. He makes some mistakes too, but these guys that win with their routes, they're pretty safe. I would say he's a bigger version of his dad as far as someone who just wins with routes, and he's just always open. But to use a more modern comparison,
can we helmet scout a little bit with Michael Thomas? Are we helmet scouting a little bit with Michael Thomas? Can we do that?
That's not a bad one either. I would say Thomas, you know, probably had even better hands in his prime than Harrison. The more modern comparison I wanted to make was Amari Cooper, as far as the guy that if you just watch him, the size doesn't stand out, like the speed isn't spectacular. You kind of wonder why he's always open, but his routes are just, you know, even at this point in his career, maybe he may be the best route runner in the league still. And I think Marvin Harrison Jr. Could be that type of player, which, given his size, his pedigree, like that makes him a really safe pick. So that's why I'm going to stick with him at number one. And I think a team like the Patriots would too. But then you have Malik Nabers, who's smaller. He stretches the field with his speed, and he's a great after the catch guy. Like you want to use the speed to stretch the field, but you also want to use the speed on the shorter routes and let him just get into the open field and run. I would say he's like a better version of Jordan Addison, or he's what everybody hopes Jordan Addison becomes.
Yeah.
He's kind of already the more polished version of that. And then Roma Dunze, who is, to me, I feel like a slightly smaller version of Mike Evans, as far as a guy who plays big, and that's primarily how he wins. His best plays are like when he's going up in traffic and just making a catch that he kind of has no business making, because he just always puts himself into position for it. But like Mike Evans, is surprisingly fast and can stretch the field with pure speed, and is surprisingly dangerous after the catch as well. Or at least Mike Evans in his prime was surprisingly dangerous after the catch for such a big receiver. So we have a nice range. We have three guys who are legitimate top 10 picks who kind of all do it in slightly different ways, which I think is really exciting.
You also had Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU, also from LSU, at 14 to the Saints. And then finishing up here with Devontae Walker, wide receiver from North Carolina, to the Chiefs. And he was the one, I'm trying to remember correctly, he was the one that missed kind of the beginning of the season because some NCAA nonsense, right?
Yeah, I think he missed the first four games. So he still got in there for the good chunk of UNC's schedule, and he put up plenty of production. He's the transfer from Kent State, where he was, you know, unstoppable in the MAC 2 years ago. And then this year, that it just seamlessly translated to playing in the ACC. I think he's maybe a little bit like a less polished version of Chris Olave. Olave's another one who wins with just spectacular routes, and Walker can do that a bit as well. But as far as like the overall athleticism, it's more pure speed than like dangerous after the catch type stuff. So he's not necessarily like the fully well-rounded prospect, but I could still see him, you know, being a great, you know, I have him going to the Chiefs. I think he could be a great fit in that offense. Somebody who can just stretch the field for Patrick Mahomes. That's certainly not a bad idea to add that to the mix.
Yeah. What if we had a good version of Marquez Valdes-Scantling? That would be,
yeah,
be wild. Him with Rice. Yeah. That the way you describe him there, that would be good. I am interested here. Two LSU receivers in the top 14 here. And then obviously Jaden Daniels as well. Is there some concern, because we saw this, you know, massive spike season from Jaden Daniels, that the wide receivers, obviously he had great wide receiver talent, we're talking about two of them in the top 14, that had something to do and maybe propped him up a little bit there? Is that part of the conversation with him?
It has to be part of the conversation, yeah, to have two elite weapons like that, especially when he doesn't have a huge arm. Daniels doesn't have that spectacular arm, and so having these guys that can consistently get open, and when he's throwing the deep ball, he has the luxury of just, you know, getting a lot of air under it and just letting them run under it. That's the way to level the playing field when you have a quarterback who doesn't have a great arm. Whereas someone like Caleb Williams, who can just fire bullets, like your receivers don't need to create as much separation. So that was definitely a factor in him winning the Heisman last year, was having those weapons. I don't think he's the type of player who can overcome being in a really bad situation. It's one of the reasons why I think if he were on the board for the Patriots, that might not be a good fit for him. It might be a really tough situation, because if you're taking a quarterback at number three, you're not taking Marvin Harrison Jr. And now all of a sudden he's got to throw the ball to Devontae Parker and DeMario Douglas and Juju Smith-Schuster. And that could, and behind the shaky offensive line, that could look ugly when you've got a quarterback who doesn't have a huge arm. So that's part of the conversation, but he also makes up for the lack of an arm with, he's one of the more accurate passers in this class. I don't think he's on Michael Penix's level, maybe not even on Bo Nix's level, but he is definitely a high level accuracy type of passer. So he'll find ways to make up for it. I think he'll still be a good starter in the league, despite not having a huge arm.
And I just wanted to finish up here. You know, I mentioned this before. You had five wide receivers here in the first round. I believe that's fewer than most. I think in most you're going to see six or seven. Who are some other names maybe at wide receiver that could sneak into this first round conversation, depending on how things of the next couple months go?
Yeah, there's a long list of guys who are at least on the fringe of this conversation. I put fewer into the first round, sort of like we talked about at the beginning. It's just there's so much depth. When you get to the end of the first round, do you really need to take a receiver when you can get a very similar player at the end of round two, even, or even on round three? Like just last year, remember, at this stage of the process, we were talking about guys like Jalen Hyatt and Josh Downs being potential first round picks. They went in the third round and they were still pretty good. Like Josh Downs had a very good rookie year. It's not like he fell off a cliff because people like figured out these flaws in him. It was just like, no, there's a lot of good wide receivers and some of them fall. But some of the guys that are going to be sort of in this conversation and probably end up on day two and, you know, maybe being the next Josh Downs, like a guy who steps in, or Rashee Rice, who make a big impact as a day two pick. I would say Keon Coleman is definitely one to look out for. He was at Florida State last year. If you watched any college football highlight shows, you definitely saw some of his highlights.
That was the name that I was surprised that I didn't read, because I follow college football, not that close, not, you know, super close that I'm going to be watching every Florida State game, but it seemed like every time I watched Florida State, he and then their other Johnny Wilson, is that their tall receiver?
Yep.
Those two guys, they seemed unstoppable. And so I was very interested to not see him here.
I left Keon Coleman out of the first round. I don't like doing comparisons from the same school, but I kind of got to do it in this case. It reminded me a little bit of Kelvin Benjamin, where it kind of just seemed almost every big play, he was jumping over somebody and he just wasn't open a whole lot. And then when you watch all of it, there's also a few too many drops and him not getting to some balls that you think he could get. I was pretty low on Kelvin Benjamin. He went in the first round, I believe, right? Didn't the Panthers take him in the first round?
I think he went to the, I'm pretty sure it was the first round.
It was the first round.
You just crushed all my Keon Coleman dreams with that. Like I
don't mean to do that. That because of how Benjamin's career ended up panning out, that sounds harsher than I intended to. Because, I mean, there was definitely some off-field stuff that, you know, work ethic issues that cratered.
Kelvin Benjamin had like a pretty good rookie season, first two seasons, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. There's a version of Kelvin Benjamin where he sticks in the league as a serviceable third weapon for a lot longer than he did if he just had the work ethic to do it, basically. And so Keon Coleman can absolutely do the same and maybe even, you know, go a little bit beyond that and be a decent number two, a decent red zone weapon, because he does have those abilities to win those jump balls. So he's another one who's in that mix. Adonai Mitchell, who I think I mentioned earlier out of Texas, he's another big body guy, but who also has the speed. I think he's probably going to test faster than Keon Coleman. That'll be an interesting, some interesting numbers to look at the combine. Troy Franklin from Oregon, he played a big part in Bo Nix's success. He's pretty dangerous after the catch, but not a small guy either. So he could potentially grow into a bigger role. Xavier Worthy from Texas, a year ago at this time, I think a lot of people thought he was going to be a first round pick because he is just blazing fast, but he is tiny. And I don't think anyone's going to take a chance on him in the first round just because of his size. We'll see what he actually measures at the combine, but he is 5'10" might be generous. I think he might be like 5'9", 160, something like that. So he's an outlier, but the speed is special. Someone's going to probably take him on day two, plug him into a third option type of role. If he ends up with a good team, I mean, let's say the Chiefs take him on day two or something like that. Like, he's immediately going to be a fantasy darling. I guarantee that, because he is just a big play waiting to happen. So there's a lot of these guys. I mean, there's four or five others I could mention that are sort of on the fringe of first round conversation, depending on how they test next month.
You've led me down a Kelvin Benjamin path. I had forgotten that in his right before his sophomore season, he tore his ACL. And so he had 1,008 yards and 9 touchdowns in 2014. And then he had a pretty good year then in 2016. By 2019, he was out of the league. What a wild career. That is, anyway, something else. You've led me down the Kelvin Benjamin path. All right. Great rundown here. Wide receiver and quarterback. Go check out the mock draft at Sharp Football Analysis. There's a ton of great information in there. As always with Ryan's mocks, and he's always one of the best most accurate predictors here with these mocks. We're going to keep doing these throughout this draft season as we get there. Combine coming up, free agency coming up. It doesn't stop. It doesn't stop, Ryan. There's no offseason here in the NFL. And we'll be here at Sharp Football Analysis and with this podcast the whole way through. So make sure you subscribe. Go over to YouTube. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Subscribe to our newsletter and keep track of all our information as we get through the offseason. And we'll be back to talk with you real soon.